From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. Back in June, Idaho Mountain Express published a story about one woman's perilous journey from Peru to Idaho in the hope of finding a better life for herself and for her children. Her story is one that has been experienced by countless immigrants south of the border. The article follows Simona as she faces dangerous landscapes, kidnapping, and even the threat of death before finally finding herself in Ketchum. Now, without a penny to her name, Simona took on 3 jobs. She worked tirelessly until she had enough money to bring her 3 sons to the Gem State. Now, despite having saved them from impending violence, her family still faced risk. Being undocumented residents of the United States meant that the possibility of deportation lurked around every single corner. Simona's story is just one of many that the Alliance of Idaho hears every single day. This nonprofit group helps protect the human rights of immigrants and their families by providing access to legal services, education, and so much more. So joining us today to talk more about the challenges that immigrants here in our state face, our executive director of the Alliance, Becky Lopez, director of communications and development, Sarah Sintelis, immigration and human rights lawyer, Luis Campos, and attorney, Sam Linnett. I want to welcome all of you to the program.
Thank you for having us, Jenna.
So as I mentioned, Simona settled in Blaine County, which is where the Alliance of Idaho is located. So I want to talk with you, Becky. Is Simona's experience indicative of the migrant experience for undocumented residents?
Yes. This is Sarah. I'm going to jump in, and then Luis is going to jump in. Her experience is very indicative of what families face when they're trying to come to the United States to have a better life for themselves and for their family. And it's becoming increasingly common, which Luis will talk about now.
Well, and this is Luis. So it's increasingly common because particularly here in this region, we have individuals coming from Peru and Central America, which means that they have to cross Mexico. And in crossing Mexico, then they fall victim to trafficking and smuggling organizations, cartels moving into this space, bringing them into the United States at exorbitant fees. And this is where the danger arises, is in this journey through Mexico and to the United States. So her story is absolutely indicative of a larger problem.
And her story also seems to be fairly familiar for many parents, is that they sometimes travel to the United States alone because they want to make sure they can set up a life for their children, and they hold out that hope that they can reunite with their children. I'm curious about what you can tell us, though, about not just the turmoil, but the trauma of family separation.
So again, this is Luis, in response to this question, I have to draw on some of the work I've done previously on the Texas, Mexico, and Arizona, Mexico border, where families were separated, mothers had their children taken, and I had clients who had, their minor children taken from them, children removed to faraway locations. In many cases, the children were unknown, the locations. So indeed, it is a larger problem of the violence committed upon the family, not only in the route to the United States, because, you know, in some cases we have families in Peru or Central America who send their kids ahead, or the adult goes ahead and then calls for the children when they have the money to bring the children, as in the article. And so it's an absolute violence brought upon the family. And the violence is brought upon the family, again, not only in the smuggling and trafficking through Mexico, but as I was saying earlier, in the examples of the Central American women who had their women or had their children separated, it's a violence brought upon them also by the United States government in many occasions.
So undocumented migrants like Simona often have no choice but to rely on strangers when it comes to safe passage across the border. Can you talk a little bit about the reality of this situation? And I know, Luis, you had mentioned, I mean, the big issue is, you know, getting across Mexico and everything you deal with. But if you can just talk a little bit more in depth about what that looks like and having to really, frankly, put your life in the hands of strangers.
Sure. So the typical case, and I'm often reluctant to call it a typical or prototypical case, but the case that we often see is an individual arriving, for example, at the Guatemala-Mexico border. And at the Mexican border, on the Mexican side, there are organizations, cartels, and other smuggling and trafficking organizations that are awaiting these immigrants to cross that border. And before those immigrants or asylum seekers are allowed to board any bus in Mexico, they are required to pay a fee to the cartels. And so this is not optional. Individuals wanting to traverse Mexico have to pay to do that. And this is where where they fall into the hands of many of these unscrupulous organizations and bring them to the border. And often, and we've seen the case, for example, recently in San Antonio, where 53 individuals died in the back of a tractor trailer. Many of these organizations and individuals, in fact, are quite unscrupulous and care very little about the lives of these individuals. So again, they're received on the Mexican side. They're transported by bus through Mexico. If they're lucky, they'll reach the Texas or Arizona or New Mexico border. In many cases, individuals are taken out of the smuggling network and put into the trafficking network, where women in particular and young women especially fall into the hands of cartels and are trafficked in Mexico. And if they're lucky, then, you know, they'll somehow be able to escape that at some point.
So let's talk about, go ahead.
This is Sam Linnett. And I just wanted to expand on what Luis said to try to bring it home to Idaho. I think the concept of human trafficking can sound foreign, or we can assume that it's something that occurs closer to the border, when it actually occurs in our state and in the Treasure Valley and Wood River Valley as well. For example, the Department of Homeland Security and USCIS office in Boise has full-time on-staff special agents that specialize and work only in human trafficking. And so this really is a problem that extends beyond the border and to where we all live and into our community.
I think that's such a good point, Sam, because it is easy, I think, for people to make the assumption that human trafficking is something that happens in other countries. And as you mentioned, I mean, it happens right here every single day.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious about the Alliance of Idaho and the mission. So Becky, can you give us some insight about the organization, why it was formed, and what you are doing to ease the burden of these folks who come into the U.S., in particular into Idaho?
So the mission of the Alliance of Idaho is to protect the human rights of immigrants. And so by doing that, we provide legal services at a low cost. So what we do is, a lot of people, Luis and Sam have mentioned, they're new to this country and don't understand how immigration works, what the process is and everything. So what we try to do is educate them about their legal options, you know, how their asylum works, what they have to do with immigration court, with ICE check-ins, pretty much guide them through the system and help them as much as we can. The good thing is that we're bilingual, so we can explain to them in their language how this whole process works.
And Becky, how many people would you say that you help or see maybe within a calendar year?
Well, we see a lot. Our busiest time is when Luis is physically in our office. And during that time, we usually have consultations of an hour. And we see about 20 to 25 people just that week while he's here. And then when he's physically not here, we work all throughout the month. So I would have to say about 35 people a month.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and that doesn't mean like physically there's people in our office, but we also have calls all the time, constantly on our hotline.
For those of us who are just joining us, let me reintroduce everyone. We are talking today about the harrowing journey that so many undocumented immigrants have coming to America. And then once they're here in Idaho, how they have to go through a process in order to make sure that they get legal status so that they can remain in the country. So who we're talking to today is Executive Director of the ADHO Alliance, Becky Lopez, Director of Communications and Development, Sarah Sintelis, Immigration and Human Rights Lawyer, Luis Campos, and Attorney Sam Linnett. And in particular, we're focusing on one woman's journey from Peru to Idaho. The Idaho Mountain Express published a story in last month about her journey. And in that story that the Idaho Mountain Express did, it documents Simona's journey. And it really gives readers an insight into what some people face when they travel from south of the border to the United States. So we've talked about, I mean, the real dangers that folks face when they are making this journey. Tell us, though, about the mental and the physical health issues, though, that so many of these immigrants must face.
Absolutely. And this is Luis Campos again. So when we see individuals in the office, the trauma absolutely comes through in these interviews. We've had, as you might imagine, individuals cry during the consultations. We've had to refer individuals to mental health experts. There's definitely a PTSD component to these cases. And so at the Alliance, we try to be sensitive and aware of this issue. Now, not to mention that when we go into proceedings, and when I mean by proceedings, I'm talking about deportation proceedings where individuals can assert their asylum claims, it's important that individuals be able to prove that there's a well-founded fear of persecution. And that usually means revisiting the horrors and the tragedies and the trauma that they suffered in their home country. So they're forced to relive this throughout the process, not only in our consultations, but actually in the legal process. It's absolutely important that an immigration judge be satisfied that the person has that well-founded fear, which means that we have to be able to not only assert, but document the pain and suffering that they had in their home country.
Well, what are the most significant? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, this is Becky. I was just going to add, besides that, we have had clients come to our office that have recently crossed the border. And I've actually had to send like a couple of them to St. Luke's to get medical attention, because a lot of them, their kids will come home with like a really high fever, extreme dehydration. Sometimes they either were beaten up at the border. So, I mean, once they get here, a lot of times they do have to seek medical attention just because of how heavy and how long that journey was on their body.
Mm-hmm. What would you say are the most significant restrictions that undocumented residents face?
Thank you for asking that, Gemma. This is Sarah Sintelis. And one of the things I've learned in my work with the Alliance is how much immigration status affects pretty much every aspect of a person's life in Blaine County. So if you're undocumented or if you're someone waiting for documents, it's going to impact your employment. It's going to impact whether you can be taken advantage of by an employer. It'll impact your negotiations with landlords. It impacts whether you can apply for financial aid if you want to go to college. It impacts pretty much everything, your ability to advocate for yourself and for your family. It creates tremendous fear, and it ends up being a real impediment to people flourishing and becoming a full civic participants in our community.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's obvious to say that many undocumented residents have limited means for good legal representation should they be faced with deportation. So how does the Alliance then help those facing legal issues?
This is Sam. I'll start and I'll let Luis follow up. But I think one of the biggest strengths, the biggest benefit that the Alliance provides to immigrants in Blaine County in the Wood River Valley is that Luis is the only Spanish-speaking bilingual immigration attorney within kind of a reasonable distance of the Valley. And so being able to speak immigrants' language and relate to them and build trust as an organization with the community as well as with individuals is really, really important to the work that we provide. And there's a huge just kind of gap in legal services for immigrants.
I want to add to that before Luis jumps in. This is Sarah. We're also the only organization that takes on asylum cases. And that's another thing that surprised me about my work with the Alliance is there are tremendous numbers of people here seeking asylum. And we're really happy that we're able to assist them.
And this is Luis. So as far as what we do specifically, probably most of our cases involve deportation or removal proceedings. So when individuals arrive at the U.S. border, they are typically processed by CBP, Customs and Border Protection officers. And if they can demonstrate, i.e. they've been vetted, they can demonstrate that they have no criminal history, they'd be released. Since our clients come here because they have, you know, friends, family, networks here in Idaho, once they arrive here, they're required to check in with ICE, with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. So we guide them through that process to ensure that they are showing up at their ICE check-ins. But just as importantly, what we do is we provide direct representation in deportation proceedings. These proceedings are held before an immigration judge in Boise. It's an adversarial process. So there's a government lawyer whose objective is to remove these individuals. We are, in effect, defense attorneys in the immigration context, and we go into proceedings and represent them. And this representation is vitally important because statistics prove that without an immigration lawyer or some sort of legal representation, most cases will be lost. And so, again, our role here is important in that sense. Additionally, and I think Becky mentioned this, you know, our representation is on a low bono basis. So there are attorneys out there in Boise and some of the surrounding larger cities, but unfortunately, they don't have necessarily the language skills, and the cost is prohibitive. So I think in that sense, the Alliance is doing wonderful work. We provide access to justice in many ways.
And then this is Becky. Just one thing I wanted to add is our hotline is 100% bilingual. So even if they don't directly talk to Luis right away, they talk to either me, who I'm bilingual, or they either talk to my assistant, Kate, and she's bilingual as well.
You know, one major issue it seems that many refugees and immigrants come up against is access to local resources. I mean, so we know the difficulties, as you have all mentioned, in regards to the legal system and what you're doing. But what resources are the most vital to help these new residents become acclimated to a new country, to a new culture?
That's a really interesting question. It's one of the things we talked about as in conversations with leaders of other nonprofits in Blaine County. During the pandemic, when we were trying to address the ever-increasing need of our community. And in Blaine County, we really have robust social services available to people, but there's a trust gap, in part because of previous administrations suggesting that if you took advantage of public assistance, it would affect your citizenship claim. There's lots of fear in immigrant communities that somehow asking for help is going to make have a negative impact on their citizenship applications. So part of what we do is solve disinformation or reframe disinformation to help people know that there are services here that they can trust. So when they come to Becky and ask for help and Becky helps them and they trust her, then they return again and again to ask for additional help, like access to mental health services like Becky was talking about, or access to the Hunger Coalition, or access to the advocates, or access to any other kind of social safety net that our community provides. So we see ourselves as kind of bridging the trust gap here.
Let's talk about the children of undocumented immigrants for a minute, because they often face different challenges than their parents, such as the inability to attend college. So I'm curious, are there any laws here in our state that bar these residents from seeking an education?
And this is Luis. So I can start in on that particular question. So you're speaking to mixed status families. You know, the children are United States citizens, and like any U.S. citizen, they should be eligible for all the benefits and rights and responsibilities like any other citizen. And so those children, of course, can attend college, for example, like any other U.S. citizen. Now, there are other cases, for example, DACA cases, DACA being the children who were brought here as undocumented individuals. They face a unique set of challenges. So, you know, DACA individuals are given a work permit, for example. They are not removed from the United States. It's a deferred process for them. But then they graduate from high school and they, you know, they might want to attend college, and college becomes challenging because of their undocumented status. DACA, again, does not provide a legal status. Mm. And so what we see is, for example, some colleges in the area, I think, allow undocumented individuals to enroll in their programs of study. But then you have the whole financial aid component. And so federal aid and so forth can, and I'm not an expert in this area by any means, but it certainly becomes highly complicated for individuals who don't have that status, who want to proceed into a college or university setting. And here I'll turn it over to Becky to give a little more information.
So adding a little bit to what Luis was saying, the Alliance of Idaho offers, we do a kind of like a workshop where we talk about education and the options. And we work together with Idaho Latino Scholarship Foundation and Boise, and we actually do a presentation about this. And Luis is there, and this organization from Boise is there, and they actually talk about their options when it comes to college, DACA, immigration. So parents and students can have more of an idea of what other options are. Mm.
And I think the big issue is financing, if I recall. I think the big issue is financing college. So I believe, and maybe I can be corrected here if I'm wrong, I believe the College of Southern Idaho, for example, a non-documented person can enroll at the College of Southern Idaho and go through a program of study. But again, the financial component is much more complicated in terms of eligibility for enrollment. The second complication arises when that individual graduates with let's say, an associate's degree, or if they're able to go on and attend a four-year university and have a bachelor's degree. The problem then is I can't necessarily work in the United States. If I have DACA, perhaps I have that option. There are other individuals, though, young people who don't have DACA, but still enroll in a program. They graduate and then that's it. There's nothing else. Because they don't have, despite having a bachelor's degree, they don't have the authorization to work in the state.
So can we talk about Blaine County itself for a moment? Why do undocumented immigrants come to Blaine County in particular? And also, like, where do they work? What kind of jobs do they hold?
This is Becky. So from us working with clients, what we've seen is a lot of people come to Idaho either because they have a relative here, or they have friends here, or, I mean, those are the two biggest, some of them have worked here in the past, and then they've gone somewhere else, and they didn't like whatever other state they went, and then they come back. So a lot of these people are your housekeepers, your landscaping people, working in construction, in concrete, in restaurants, pretty much everything. They work everywhere they can work. They work anywhere they can get work.
We have about 3 minutes left, and I want to hone in on this issue, because I am sure you get these comments. I'm sure there are people who probably listen right now who may feel this way. What do you say to people who believe that undocumented immigrants just should not come to the United States?
So this is Luis again. So we represent both asylum seekers, or also known as refugees, and immigrants. And so there are multiple reasons for coming to the United States. And, you know, my first reaction to that question is to individuals, for example, born in the United States, and that's quite a privilege. if you had not been born in the United States, had been born in a poor community, in a violent community in Central America, Peru, I often tell people you would probably be doing the exact same thing to escape persecution, to escape violence, provide a better life for your children. And that's typically the response that, I provide. And yes, immigrants come for a better life. And it's hard to fault people for wanting to come for a better life. Refugees come because they're fleeing persecution. It's hard to fault them for that reason. And, you know, we also have international obligations. In the United States, we have signed international refugee treaties. We have an obligation to, at the very least, accept an application, process it fairly, and not punish individuals for arriving here and asking for refuge in the United States. You know, the other thing, and one final point on that, is I often also hear, well, people should wait in line. You know, people should wait in their home country and wait in line to, apply for an immigrant visa or citizenship. Well, let me give you one point on that. There is a line. But that line often takes 22 years before a resident visa would be available. So if a U.S. citizen petitions for their sibling abroad, the current wait time in order to apply for a resident visa based on that relationship is currently 21, 22, or 23 years. And that is an example of a broken U.S. Immigration system.
Yeah. I have about 1 minute left. Would anyone else like to quickly comment on that?
I think what we feel in our work is that the people coming here are coming here because they want a better life for their families. They're hardworking. Mm-hmm. We had a person come here who traveled alone as a 16-year-old, basically walked part of the way from Peru all the way here. And these are actually the very strong, courageous, creative, brilliant humans that we want as part of our communities. So I think that narrative needs to be flipped, that these are courageous, beautiful, incredible, family values human beings that we want to embrace and make sure they feel welcomed here instead of criminalized.
And I think to remember what Luis said, that it is a privilege to be born in this country. I want to thank all of you for joining us today and talking in depth about this. We've been talking with Executive Director of the Alliance of Idaho, Becky Lopez, Director of Communications and Development, Sarah Sintelis, Immigration and Human Rights Lawyer, Luis Campos, and Attorney Sam Linnett. We've been talking about the challenges that immigrants here in Idaho are facing and they continue to face, but also the resources that are available to them. Thank you all for the conversation today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.